of Appeals. We have two matters on the 130 docket. The first is Lampert against Ritter Inaugural Committee, Inc., and the second is People against Delgado. Is this Joshua Roberto Delgado? Are counsel present in both cases? All right, good. And I assume you received instruction sheets on how the clock works, the purpose of the lighting system, and so forth. If there are any questions, I'll take those. Otherwise, I'd ask that members of the audience and counsel turn off pagers and cell phones so that we're not interrupted during the argument. And counsel for the appellant, Lampert, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Scott Gessler. I represent the appellant Kent Lampert in this case. With the court's permission, I'd like to focus primarily on two issues during oral argument. First is whether or not the express terms of the report, the patent report that Lampert included with his amended complaint, contradicted Lampert's allegations that the October 24th, 2007 payment to the campaign manager was a contribution to the campaign. And then the second is whether or not the court improperly awarded attorney's fees below. If the court asks me questions or if time permits, I'm certainly willing to address other issues, such as whether or not contributions must be aggregated over an election cycle rather than a 180-day period, and also whether Lampert's fourth claim of relief alleged that the inaugural committee failed to file ongoing reports as a political committee. So the first issue, basically, Lampert alleged that the inaugural committee made an illegal contribution to the candidate committee in the form of a $350 payment to the campaign manager of the candidate committee. Now, the court ruled against this, based on stating that although these allegations were made, that the patent report contradicted those allegations. That's what the court's holding was below. And I think I would direct the court to get to the heart of the matter, to the patent report itself. And if you look at the patent report, I believe we submit that that patent report, not only do the express terms not contradict the allegations, but in fact the terms and the text narrative within that report provides support for Lampert's allegations. To begin with, the last page of the report, Exhibit H, identifies a $350 payment made from the inaugural committee to Greg Kolomitz on October 24th, 2007. And the report leaves this payment as an uncharacterized payment. The report essentially has three categories. One, treats it as campaign-related expenses, two, inaugural committee expenses, and three is uncharacterized expenses. That's what the exhibit shows. But the narrative itself actually, I submit, shows that it's highly plausible that this payment to Greg Kolomitz was in fact a contribution to the candidate committee. First, looking at the text, looking at the six-page narrative of this report, it states unequivocally that the payments to Kolomitz, unless otherwise indicated, were not for inaugural committee activities, were not for expenditures for the inaugural committee. Then if you look, particularly I'm turn the court's attention to page 5 of the report, that's on the record at page 59, the report states that the inaugural committee made a payment to Linda Flieger well after the inaugural committee's activities had ended. They ended in roughly January of 2007. And the report says that the inaugural committee continued to pay Linda Flieger as an employee or contractor. I'm not exactly sure if it was an employee or a contractor, but made to her in her personal capacity. And it said that they spoke with Ms. Flieger, and she said, no, my work wasn't for the inaugural committee. My work was for the campaign. And that's why they treated it as a campaign expense. And the key phrase there is they said, similar issues exist for payments to Greg Kolomitz and Solutions West and Sheila McDonald.
What page are you reading from, counsel?
Your Honor, I'm reading from page 5 of the report, and that's the record, page 59.
Got it.
And it's the second full paragraph. And it says, and sort of the third to the last line towards the end, it says, similar issues exist with respect to post-January 2007 payments to Sheila McDonald and Greg Kolomitz. So in other words, the report is saying, the committee did the same thing with those two people, with Greg Kolomitz and Sheila McDonald. I think this certainly shows that creates a strong inference that payments to them in their personal capacities were for their work on the candidate committee, even though the checks came from the inaugural committee. The other thing to look at, and this is what I think is critical, is the narrow reading for the term campaign expenses or campaign-related expenses used in the report. And the report basically says, we did a couple things. We looked at records of the inaugural committee. And in fact, Exhibit C is a very explicit listing of everything that the auditors relied upon. Their reports, their reports, public reports from the campaign committee, but only internal documents from the inaugural committee. Now we know that in one instance they went beyond that because they spoke with Ms. Flagger. They say that, although they don't list that in Exhibit C. But otherwise, Exhibit C, they only limit it to that. And their definition of a campaign-related expenditure is something that shows up in documents of the inaugural committee, and that's why they treated it as a campaign expenditure. They provided no analysis as to the purposes or the intent of the payments to Greg Kolomitz or to Sheila McDonald. Yes, sir.
Can I stop for a second? Ms. Flieger said that the checks were issued for campaign services. That's what the note you just read
states. Sir.
Therefore, shouldn't they appear on Exhibit G? Or do they appear on Exhibit G? I guess is what I'm asking.
I don't, if I may take 5 minutes for
rebuttal. I'm sorry, I find them.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I was about to say, if I may take 5 minutes for rebuttal, I can certainly
answer
that.
They do, I see.
Okay. So, if I may continue, sir. Basically, the data considered was very limited here, and it was a very cramped reading. Well, I shouldn't say cramped. It was a very specific reading of what campaign expenses were treated in the report. That's different than Colorado's legal standard of what a contribution is. And a contribution, there are several definitions of contribution, but that includes payments to third party for essentially services rendered to a candidate committee, or payments paid for the purpose and for the benefit of a candidate committee.
Counsel, are you distancing yourself from the patent report, or are you adopting the patent report?
Sir, Your Honor, I think that I'm not distancing myself from the patent report. We certainly included that as part of the complaint.
Did you incorporate it into the complaint?
I think the lower judge treated it as being incorporated based on a decision from this court that says, you know, factual allegations within the, you know, within the any reports or any attachments are treated as part of the complaint.
The Stegman or Stauffer Stegman case.
Yes, sir.
So, and so are we bound by that case?
I don't think this court is necessarily bound by that case. It's certainly a former decision by this appellate court and is valuable for its persuasiveness, but I don't think this court is bound by stare decisis for that because it didn't come from the Colorado Supreme Court. But I will say that case was very limited, and then it said you only strike your allegations in the complaint if it is contrary to express terms in an attachment. And I submit here that there are no express terms at all in this patent report that contradict the allegations that Lambert made in the amended complaint. And as I just explained, not only do they not contradict the allegations Lambert made in his complaint, but they provide support for those allegations. Certainly, you know, under IBCAL, I hope I'm pronouncing that, the supplementary authority produced by the appellees, the court said there's sort of three ways to look at a complaint. Does it establish the possibility of a violation, the plausibility of a violation, or the probability of a violation? And the court there said if you look at it, establishing the possibility of a violation is not enough. You have to establish the plausibility of a violation, but you need not establish the probability of a violation. Here, we say the Lambert complaint, and certainly when supplemented with a patent report that was included, it establishes the plausibility that $350 payment given to the campaign manager in his capacity as a campaign manager was a contribution to the candidate committee. We're not required to show the probability that occurred, but merely the plausibility here. And I think that both the complaint read with the patent report do show the plausibility.
Does the complaint state a claim independent of the patent report?
We believe it does. However, I would note that we included the patent report specifically to establish that an October 24th, 2007 payment was in fact made. So I think it's necessary for certainly at least that fact, and that's why we included it with that particular allegation in our complaint.
Do you concede that the expenses listed on Exhibit G, all of which predate the complaint by 180 days, are not subject to being heard by the administrative law judge?
On balance, I would say we are saying that, Your Honor.
So we're really talking about the one $350 payment?
Yes, sir. I mean, we've analyzed that pretty closely. It's a very strict reading of the statute of limitations. It's certainly an open question for the future. But we're not contesting it in this particular instance.
So if we were to remand this case, this would be a case about one $350 contribution, right?
That's correct.
And what would the relief would you seek in front of the administrative
law? The relief is between 2 and 5 times the penalty of the $350 excess contribution.
So this is a $1,750 case maximum?
That, in dollar amounts, that would be correct, Your Honor. Very quickly, I'd like to also discuss certainly the attorney's fees provision. Basically, what the court below did is said this case is dismissed, and because it's dismissed, there was no substantial basis for the complaint, therefore I'm awarding attorney's fees. Our argument is simple. First of all, the standard for attorney's fees is fundamentally different than the standard for a motion to dismiss. The court erroneously treated them as the same. We think that this was not a frivolous complaint. It was certainly not a groundless complaint because we didn't go to trial and collect evidence. We say it's not a frivolous complaint because it was well-grounded in both fact and law. The facts include the patent report, but the facts also include the attachments that we provided, certainly with respect to the attorney's fees. The facts include the attachments that we provided showing that Mr. Kolomitz had continued to receive reimbursements and continued to receive money from the candidate committee well into the October 2007 period and, in fact, into 2008. We think that establishes a good faith fact that that Mr. Kolomitz was working on behalf of the candidate committee in his position as campaign manager during the period that he also received the $350 payment from the inaugural committee.
But the ALJ says even if you're right, even if the $350 is a contribution, it doesn't exceed the $1,050 limit that was in place at the time.
We think it clearly exceeds the $1,050 limit.
Well, $350 doesn't exceed $1,050. We can agree on that.
You have to add, Your Honor, I'd submit the $350 to the $200,000 that was contributed earlier. That's undisputed. That was made, that was a contribution. But it was beyond the 180-day statute of limitations. Mm-hmm. Basically, if I'm a contributor and I contribute, let's say, $1,000 early in the campaign cycle, early in the election cycle, that election cycle extends beyond 180 days.
Let me stop you there. The phrase election cycle is used in the constitutional provision, but I don't find it used anywhere in connection with the gubernatorial campaign. I do find it used in connection with the state representative, state senator campaigns, but I don't see it used in the gubernatorial campaigns. Are you using it just as a generic term?
No, sir. I think it is used specifically with respect to the applicable election period. This would be a 4-year period. If I may take 1 minute for rebuttal, I'll certainly find the citation there. But I think that even if it were limited to a 2-year election cycle, it would still apply here. What essentially the court ruled, and I think the appellees are defending, is that if I give $1,050, the maximum, on day one of the election cycle, and then I wait until day 181, I can then give another $1,050 for a total of $2,100 during that election cycle. And when we cited Rule 3.10A, in which the Secretary of State was very clear that contributions are aggregated during an election cycle, and you have to follow those limitations within that election cycle. Otherwise, essentially, what I think that interpretation does is it creates a possibility to game the system, to time contributions so that you can exceed the aggregate, and the emphasis is on the word aggregate, the aggregate election, the aggregate contribution limits for an election, as opposed to the aggregate contribution limits for a 180-day period of limit, 180-day limitations. So the violation here with the $350, the violation occurred when the $350 was made, and that $350 was an excess contribution because it has to be added to those earlier contributions from the inaugural committee.
But harking back to my prior question, still the only issue for the ALJ in this case would be whether the $350 was an excess contribution.
That's the primary issue. There's a secondary issue. We also alleged that the inaugural committee, by spending about $250,000 to $300,000, became a political committee and had an ongoing reporting requirement. Okay. So that's the second.
But again, that violation must be brought within 180 days.
Yes, it does. And so only the reports that were due within 180 days of our complaint.
Right.
Which
apply. Is the same as the 350, the dated 350 payment, because it happens to fall 180 days before.
Actually, it's a little bit after that payment, because you make the payment, and then at the end of the period, you have to file the report. Your Honor, if I may take 30 seconds for rebuttal, I'll give the citation that you requested and maybe make a few wrap-up comments. Thank you very much.
May it please the court, my honorable opponent, I'm Blaine Myrie, counsel for the Bill Ritter for Governor Candidate Committee. With me is John Walsh, who is the counsel for the inaugural committee, and we'll be dividing argument time. And I will be addressing the issue on the $350 payment, and Mr. Walsh will be addressing issues regarding the disclosure requirements for the inaugural committee. The allegation that the $350 payment was a contribution is a legal conclusion that is not supported factually either in the complaint or by the patent report. Without additional factual allegations showing the purpose for that payment, the $350 payment, and that it was an expense related to the campaign or campaign issues, then it cannot be a contribution under the Colorado Constitution, and if it's not a contribution, there is no violation. And that's why the administrative law judge properly dismissed the complaint. And she noted along these lines that none of the allegations in the complaint link the $350 payment to the campaign expenditures. And that's supported by the report from the PAC committee.
But so she drew the conclusion and made a finding of fact that it was not a campaign contribution.
Well, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. I think that is a conclusion of law. What is a contribution is a legal question interpreting the state constitution, and if there's not factual support for it in the allegations or in the patent report, then that there is no support for that, and it becomes a conclusory allegation, legal conclusion couched in a in factual as a factual allegation.
So we get to determine it de novo.
Yes, review is de novo, absolutely. The patent report, to answer Judge Richmond's question, I don't believe that the complaint on its face without the patent report is sufficient, because the $350 payment allegation isn't linked to a campaign expense and therefore is not a contribution. So to answer that question, I believe it is not. The complaint on its face is not sufficient.
Well, and paragraph 17 says the final contribution by the committee took place on October 27, 2006. I know there's a typo in the date.
Right.
In the form of a payment to the Ritter for Governor campaign manager, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, Columns. Why doesn't that allege a contribution?
It alleges a contribution, but you need factual support. You need a factual allegation that demonstrates that the payment itself is a contribution. In other words, you need factual support to show that it meets the definition of contribution under the statute. Otherwise, it's just a legal conclusion. They made a payment to Colomitz, therefore that was a contribution. That's a bare-bones legal conclusion, which is the type that this court does not owe deference to and need not accept as true in ruling on a motion to dismiss. In other words, as the administrative law judge noted, there needed to be a link between the $350 payment and some sort of campaign expense. And if that allegation isn't in the complaint fails.
Oh, and the prior paragraph says contributions by the committee took the form of non-monetary contributions in which the inaugural committee paid direct expenses for the governor. Isn't that the campaign expense allegation?
It is, but then they don't follow up and say that the payment was a contribution. But even so we do contend that the complaint on its face isn't sufficient. But on top of that, you have the patent report, which I think drives the nail in the coffin for the complaint. Under federal law, and as this court held in the Stauffer opinion, when you have an attachment to a complaint, when a plaintiff attaches a document to a complaint, contradictory, it's the contents of that document that control over contradictory allegations in the complaint. So to the extent, if it does, that the complaint alleges there is a contribution, or the $350 payment was a contribution, that is belied by what the patent report says. The patent report listed a series of 36 campaign expenses that the inaugural committee paid.
On Exhibit G.
On Exhibit G, correct. That $350 payment is not on that list.
What definition did they apply? What criteria did they apply to determine their campaign expenses? But let me put it another way. Do we know that they applied the definition of contribution to determine that they were campaign expenses?
Your Honor, from I don't believe that we know that they applied the constitutional definitions under Section 25A of the Constitution. However, they did look to see if the expenditures were related to the activity of the campaign, just as they looked to see if the payments were related to the activity of the inaugural committee.
But as you just said yourself a few minutes ago, the issue here is, was this a contribution within the meaning of the constitutional amendment?
Right, which if it's not related to a campaign expense, it's not a contribution. It has to either, and the reason I say that is the definitions relied on are, it's for the purpose of advancing the candidate's nomination, election, retention, or it is the payment by a third party of an expense of the candidate committee. That's a campaign expense, no matter how you slice it. And Mr. Kolomitz, not the candidate committee, paid this back. And that's a distinction between what Mr. Gessler relies on, this Linda Flieger payment. That payment to Ms. Flieger was classified as a campaign expense, was listed on Exhibit G, and was paid back by the candidate committee. With regard to this $350 payment, it's not classified as a campaign expense, it's not paid back by the candidate committee, and instead is paid back by Mr. Kolomitz, who also was the one who wrote the check in the first place.
Mr. Myrie, it's not excluded as a campaign expense either. If you look at page 6 of the report, it states, attached here too at Exhibit H is a listing of payments to Kolomitz et al. The frequency and magnitude of which go beyond our understanding of the amounts that were paid to the inaugural committee for their services.
Correct.
And so you're left to wonder, when you look at Exhibit H, since the $350 payment is not characterized at all, you're left to wonder, why isn't that a campaign expense?
Right below that, too, the report notes that all those payments to Kolomitz, including the $350 payment on Exhibit H, the inaugural committee was reimbursed by Mr. Kolomitz for that $83,000, including the $350 payment. Had it been a contribution, the candidate committee would have reimbursed it, as they did for the $217,000. They would have been required by law. Otherwise, the repayment for Mr. Kolomitz itself would have been a contribution. And counsel has not alleged that that is, in fact, the case. So, Your Honor, I don't want to use up my co-counsel's time, so if there are no further questions, I'll sit down.
May it please the court, John Walsh of Hill and Robbins, appearing on behalf of the Ritter Inaugural Committee. I'm principally up here to just argue one relatively small point, and that is with an issue that it pertains only to the Inaugural Committee, and that is the question of whether or not the Inaugural Committee was required to file a no-activity report in January of 2008 in the event that the court were to affirm the ALJ in finding that the October 2007 $350 payment was not a political contribution. On appeal, for the first time, the appellant has raised the argument that even given what the ALJ found with respect to the $350 payment, that the inaugural committee was required, because it had been converted, allegedly, into a political committee, to file a report in January of 2008 of no activity. The simple reason why that argument fails is that it was not raised below. To the contrary, in the briefing on the motions to dismiss, the inaugural committee very specifically stated that because the October 2007 payment was not a political contribution, an argument the ALJ accepted, that the last report that the inaugural committee would have had to file, even if it were a political committee, was in October of 2007. In response to that, appellants responded that the $350 payment was a political contribution and therefore had to be reported, but at no point in the proceedings below argued that a no activity report needed to be filed. For that reason, under the estate of Stevenson case, there this court does not properly have that issue before it, and it should not be held in appellant's favor. I do want to say, having said that, I do want to say two things quickly about the Patton report, because I know that's where the focus.
Let me just quickly. But if it's the other way, if it is a campaign contribution, then a report by January was due.
If it was a political contribution, then there was a reporting requirement. If, and this is an important if the inaugural committee was in fact a political committee. And as we've alleged both below and in our brief here, the complaint did not adequately allege that the inaugural committee became a political committee, because it failed to allege the major purpose test that is required both under the U.S. Supreme Court's Buckley versus Vallejo case and also under the Tenth Circuit's opinion in Colorado Right to Life Committee, which came down in 2007.
Did the ALJ make a finding on that point?
Your Honor, the ALJ, I would suggest the ALJ's comment was essentially saying, assuming that all of the facts related to that are the case, so that we treat it as a political committee, then we go ahead and find okay. That there would have to be a report of that contribution.
So she didn't make a finding either way, really?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. Now, I do want to go back very quickly, and I see the time is going, and just add a couple of comments with respect to the Patton report, because that's really the nub of this appeal in many ways. To build on what Mr. Myrie has already indicated, I would point out that at pages 5 and 6 of the Patton report, in describing how they went about characterizing the political contributions that were made or not made in this case, the Patton team went to lengths to state that it should be emphasized, and that making such allocations, this is the bottom of page 5 of the report, we have intentionally assumed the risk of allocating to the campaign amounts that may later prove not to have been campaign related. They are erring on the side of caution. Understanding the constitutional requirements for reporting, when in doubt, they allege they essentially allocated an expense as a campaign contribution.
Well, although they may be erring that way, Mr. Walsh,
yes,
they say at page 6, you've told us that the inaugural committee has been reimbursed by Calumet Solutions West for the payments listed on Exhibit H. So it appears that they make no value judgment whatsoever with respect to the payments on Exhibit H.
Your Honor, I would put it a different way. I would say that they very carefully and in an overbroad way allocated the expenditures to the campaign expense category where they could. And only those areas where there was simply no evidence to suggest that it was a campaign-related expense did they leave the expense in a different category, and including Exhibit H. And I would also say the fact that these may not have been expenses of the inaugural committee either does not mean that they had to be expenses of the campaign committee. There is the simple possibility that these were overpayments to Mr. Kolomitz, which explains why Mr. Kolomitz would have paid them back the end of the day.
That may very well be the case, except that the ALJ here concludes that it's a campaign expense or not a campaign expense.
Well, Your Honor, I think what the ALJ is doing is saying, I'm accepting on its face the way the Patton report is written. And the Patton report, in her interpretation, and we agree, is saying these are the campaign contributions, these are the contributions for which there is no support, specific support for the notion that they are campaign contributions.
She says, as discussed above, the ALJ has concluded that the October 24, 2007 payment from the inaugural committee to Mr. Kolomeitz was not for campaign-related activities. But she doesn't set forth the facts or the specifics.
Well,
how she divined from Exhibit H that conclusion.
Your Honor, I would first suggest that she was justified in that statement because of the overbroad methodology that the report itself says it's using for assigning expenses to the campaign expense category. And secondly, because Mr. Kolomeitz paid the money back. That was a fair inference by the ALJ to make a conclusion like that. Having said that, Your Honor, and I think this is very important, this court can affirm based on any basis in the record. And whether or not the ALJ below specifically made a finding, a factual finding, or, as I think Mr. Myrie appropriately stated, merely made a finding of law that the complaint failed adequately to allege that this was this $350 was a campaign contribution, the court properly should affirm. I see my time is up unless there are further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll try to make three quick points. First, the definition of election cycle is in Article 28, Section 2, 6A. That's one of the definitions. It says the period of time beginning 31 days following a general election for the particular office and ending 30 days following the next general election for that office. Here's the governor's office, so it's a four-year period. Second, I direct this court's attention again to Allegation 17. We say a payment was made to the campaign manager, not to the man on the street, not to the inaugural committee manager, but to the campaign manager. Third, the emphasis on the payback by Kolomeitz is an inference, which may or may not prove to be borne out during a trial on this issue, but at most it's an inference. It's not an express term in the report that contradicts Lambert's allegations, nor is a fact established in the report. It's guesswork, it's an inference on behalf of the appellees and perhaps the lower court as well. My time is up, but I'm happy to entertain any final questions.
Thank you, Mr. Guesswork.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you again, Mr. Walsh. Mr.